Hey everybody, this is Sarah Kirkpatrick,
Judy Cohen,
Andrew Battaferano,
and we are here for another edition of the Boston Hockey Pod. We are your trusted Boston hockey blog writers, here to talk about all things BU hockey after a pretty concerning 5-2 loss to the University of Connecticut the other day. Andrew wasn't there, he was off preparing for midterms. Judy and I were there. I didn't really like much of what we saw.
Nope.
I think it's fair to say.
Nope.
What did you not like, Judy?
I didn't like the defense. I didn't like the fact that two of UConn's goals were scored on really close rebounds that probably could have been cleared by BU defensemen like they were being by UConn's D-men at the other end of the ice in front of Nichols. And those led to two goals for the Huskies, so that was not great.
I mean, I think one of the promising things is at least they were getting, BU was getting opportunities, and I think they had, what, 38 shots on goal?
Yeah, yeah, and when you face someone like Nichols, like,
that's,
get two in, that's kind of...
That's pretty good. Nichols is pretty good. It's almost concerning that they're getting that many shots, and you have a guy like Ati who's not... who's a pretty big goal scorer, he still doesn't have a goal. The fact that he gets, what, four shots on goal and still isn't.
And three posts.
Yeah, three posts in the
in
past,
one
like,
game.
Two games or something.
And I think that's been a concern maybe throughout all four games this season. You've seen BU get at least, I think, over 30 shots in the first four games. And yeah, they're scoring. They've had a couple of games where they've scored four. But at times, it's not easy like it was last year. You know, you'd see that first line last year with Jack Eichel and just everyone else come out on the ice and it's like, oh, here's a goal. And this year they've really had to try and work for their goals. And yeah, it is concerning. Maybe not as much as it would be if it were 10 games into the season if Adi didn't have a goal. But yeah, he's hit the post quite a bit of times. He hit three in that first UConn game, which BU won. But yeah, I mean, the offense has got to keep it going, got to get it going, I should say.
And another thing, it's a small sample size, but through four games, BU's shooting percentage is 8.7, which isn't particularly low at all. That's pretty average. So it's not like they're waiting for pucks to start going in. I think they just need to take better shots, maybe. I don't even know.
All right, yeah, and I think we really weren't the only concerned ones about their performance the other day. Coach Quinn, when we talked to him this afternoon, said something to the extent of, oh, what game on Tuesday? We didn't play Tuesday. That was our club team. That wasn't us. So I think he very much wants to forget that game, kind of learn from it, but not view that as anything indicative of their ability. But he's been playing with the lines all year, and he told us that this weekend, at least for Friday, he intends to switch up the first two lines. He has Jacob Frisbacka Carlson moving to the first line. He's going to center that with Daniel Regan on the wing. And then Matt Lane, who played on the first line on Tuesday, he's going to move back down to the second line, and he'll be centering that with Greenway and Coleman on the lines. Mm-hmm. I kind of like it. I don't know what you guys think. I think it has a lot of potential.
Yeah, I think JFK on the first line in the middle between those guys is really good. He is great through the middle and just great with a stick and he's so fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the just, speed especially.
Right, so
means.
He might be able to facilitate that goal scoring for Ati. He might be able to help Danny focus on his scoring too. So I think that's a really interesting move and one that's definitely going to give some good results.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think JFK, with all that speed and his puck handling, really brings another dimension to that first line. I've really liked what I've seen out of him in the short time that he's been with BU, and I think that first line really does need a playmaker to get those guys open. And, I mean, Danny played on the wing pretty much all of last year,
yeah.
So it's not like he's not used to playing on the wing, so I don't think it'll be too much of an adjustment for him. And as for the second line, I think moving Greenway down, I mean, he's still young, so I don't think it's much of a problem for him. And also, I think it gives the second line a nice little balance. You know, you got the speed with Lane and Clunen, and you got a little power and size with Greenway, so... I think overall that second line could look a little bit different than it did when you had all three speed guys with JFK, Clunen, and Lane. But I think again, it has potential.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of fans, at least like in our live blog that we've seen, are kind of freaking out about what's wrong with the forwards. Why aren't they scoring?
Yeah.
What's the matter? Which I mean, like we've been talking about, it's such a small sample size so far. He's still kind of figuring out what he wants. I think this combination, I mean, I feel like we probably say this every time he switches it up, but I really like this.
Yeah.
I really like this change. And I mean, it's not, that kind of brings me into a question that one of our readers had on Twitter from Manny Dotel. Everybody's kind of been worried about Robbie Bilargeon, AJ Greer, kind of these third and fourth line guys, or maybe at one point second line guys, but it's
or
still
should be
or should be in the future be second line guys. Kind of where they belong. Should we be worried about them yet? So the exact question from Manny was, will Bilargeon and Greer eventually progress the way they should? I think it's a valid question. I mean, I'm our resident Robbie Bilargeon expert, having written about him. We all have our, we're all experts on particular players just based on who we've written about before. But I mean, I'll take the reins on the Bilargeon question. I got a bit of flack the other day from somebody in a live blog about my feel good feature on Robbie Bilargeon.
Yes.
But I mean, if you look at a guy like Robbie, he had mono last year, which I hope at this point isn't news to anybody. but I mean, I've never had mono, but it's not a good time.
No.
And it's not easy to come back from, but especially for a Division I athlete to come back from. So I think if anybody's using Robbie's season last year, his sophomore season, as a baseline for anything indicative of his talent, I think that's honestly an absolute joke. And I think somebody asked in the live blog the other day, yeah, is it, like, can we call Bilargeon a bust yet? Which is just
no,
absolutely absurd, and I think both of you guys would agree with me on that. Calling him a bust is pretty absurd.
And that, I mean, yeah, he did have a good freshman year that you bring up on a bad team especially, but I think bust kind of connotes that he had these insane expectations coming in. And I mean, I don't know what the exact expectations were coming from at least the coaching staff's point, but I think he was a solid player coming in, and they expected a solid player. And like you said, last year, it's really hard to judge because he was really sick. And in giving him this bust label, I don't think you can do that just because I think that's unfair, especially with how early it is in this season.
I think he's still kind of figuring out where he fits in this offense. Everybody's still figuring that out. But moving on to AJ Greer, I think this is a more complicated topic.
AJ is harder to pin down because we haven't necessarily seen him in the way that we've seen Robbie. Just Robbie, like, really tore it up his freshman year. I mean, he was leading point scorer on a bad team, but AJ kind of struggled last year. He got going at the end of the year, had some pretty important goals, and then this year's kind of off to a similar start as he was last year, and we just haven't seen him be that kind of breakout player, so it's harder to assess where he's going to be going from here, at least for me.
Right, and I think I've talked about this with some people, and especially Connor Ryan, one of our former Boston Hockey bloggers who's now since moved on to Mass Live, so congrats, Connor. We've talked about guys like AJ Greer, these power forwards, and I mean, they're different than a playmaker or a sniper in the sense that these power forwards take longer to develop, and you might not see him score a ton of goals, and we haven't seen him score a lot. And yeah, Judy mentioned he did have a couple down the stretch last year, especially that one-timer he scored against North Dakota in the Frozen Four semifinal, which was one of the better goals I remember seeing all year. And he's a second-round pick this past year from the Colorado Avalanche, so clearly his talent and his potential is getting noticed from NHL-level scouts. So I think, again, I don't know if you can label him a bust, just his type of player. It takes longer for them to develop and get used to the game. And remember, he's coming from Kimball Union Academy, and he accelerated here. This was supposed to be his freshman year. He came last year, a year early. So I think, again, he's still adjusting, and I think we will see him at some point play as the player that he's supposed to be.
And I think it's really hard to pick them out in particular as guys who aren't performing up to their ability,
definitely,
because I don't think too many of the others are really performing to their full potential either. So I think it might be just a bit unfair to them to be picking them out as guys who should be overachieving and aren't necessarily, because like I say, guys like Ati, Danny's doing fine, but even he could probably be doing better. I think it's
Just what we've come to expect from him.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that
everyone can be doing
better. At
this
point, everybody can be doing better, and we probably shouldn't be worried about just AJ.
I think a lot of the expectations probably have to do with the success from last season. They got off to such a hot start. They really sustained it throughout the whole year. And as Quinn pointed out, they never lost two games in a row, and they were really proud of that. And now, I mean, they haven't yet, but they're 2-2, so it's kind of a different start, and everyone's ready to jump off the cliff, panicking about the season. But calm down, it's still early, there's still time for things to happen.
So Coach Quinn also has adjusted the defense, or plans on adjusting it Friday night. I think for a good part of the season, if not all of it, he's had Hickey playing with McAvoy, which we really, really did not like. But fear not, Hickey and will be paired up again with Brandon Fortunato for Friday. Switching up the other pairs a bit too, he's going to have Doyle Summerby playing with Charlie McAvoy, and then Brian Diffley will be playing with John McLeod.
Yeah, I think the moves to the defensive pairs, it's interesting, and I really think that the second pair with Summerby and McAvoy is a really good combination. Summerby, you know, in his third year, I think he's really matured the last 2 years. He was good last year, and I think even this year, even better. And he's gotten a couple points the first couple games, which isn't something that he's all about. He's a stay-at-home guy, if there ever was one. And McAvoy's a guy that loves to jump into the play, and we've seen him down low on the power play a lot. He really likes to be part of the offense. So I think those two really complement each other. And I think that third pair with Diffley and McLeod, you're going to see just both guys kind of really sticking at home, playing defense, and not worrying as much about scoring, which I think is good to have on the back end to help whoever is in goal, whether it be Lecouvé or McGuire.
But I think the McAvoy-Summerby pairing is really great just because Charlie at times plays like a fourth forward, and to have someone like Doyle who can hold up the back end while he goes and does that is really, really valuable. And although Hickey and Fortunato are both kind of similarly offensively minded, they still have a lot of experience playing with one another that I think they'll be able to balance each other out more than maybe Hickey and McAvoy did in those first couple games. And though, yeah, Andrew said McLeod and Diffley will probably stay at home, I think they're probably going to try and get them a little bit to get the offense going, just moving the puck more than maybe they would have had them do it before. But it's just, I really like the way that he's changed up the defensive pairings.
And just one more thing about Joel Summerby. I think he has fallen into kind of a leadership role. He's the oldest one. And he's been playing with guys like Shane Switzer to kind of help guide them a little bit. And I think him being paired with McAvoy will maybe help calm Charlie down. Because, I mean, Charlie's a really good player. We know that. But we just might have not seen that yet from him. So I think playing with a big guy, a really kind of respectful guy too, like Doyle Summerby, will help him calm down a bit better.
Right, and I think Summerby might not wear a letter, but I think he acts as a de facto leader of that group, especially right now with Grizzlick out, and I think his leadership is invaluable, and his play on the ice also is invaluable because I think he gives them a nice, steady presence.
Absolutely, and I think it's fair to say this defense is not the same without Matt Grizzlick. We have heard that he is making progress. Matt's making progress. But Coach Quinn still won't give us an exact date, but he said we should expect to see him back soon, which I think will help.
And it also kind of settles the uncertainty surrounding the pairings. Like, they have been shuffled a couple times now, and with Grizzlick back, I think they will fall into a more secure pattern.
Right, and I think that's what made them so successful last year. Right. You had a lot of freshmen, a lot of young guys playing their first time in college hockey, and it's a big adjustment. And they were playing with the same pairs pretty much every night, minus a couple of games with a couple injuries, and TJ Ryan filled in a couple times. But this year you've seen a lot of guys playing with different people that they never even played with last year. I mean, maybe they did in practice, but not much in games. And I think there's an adjustment period for that. But I think when Grizzlick comes back, you'll see some more stability with the pairings, and not only that, just his presence on the ice. You know, he's your captain, he's your leader, and just his play, you know, he's great with the offense, moving the puck, he can shoot, he can score, and he's good on the defensive end too. He's good with the stick. He's not the biggest guy in the world, we know that, but he's just a good all-around player, and I mean, he's an All-American, so I think not having him hurts, but he should be back relatively soon from what Quinn said, so I think the defense should see an improvement when he comes back.
Anytime you get one of the best defensemen in the country back on defense, there's going to be an improvement on defense.
I don't think you could disagree with that.
Yeah.
Somebody in our live blog the other day suggested that when Grizzlick comes back, let's maybe move him to forward or have him be a first liner.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the point of
why. I can
why,
see the thought process.
I can see it. Why. I mean, he's good at handling the puck. He can, like I said, he can shoot, he can pass. He's got the skills. But I mean, you're not going to take your best defenseman, an All-American defenseman at that,
and put
maybe the best defenseman in the country, and put him at forward, and I don't even know where you'd put him as, like, where would you put him, wing, center? I don't know where you would be able to play. I just don't know. Grizzlick's been on defense for a long time, and I don't see that happening.
Someone commented in the live blog that I really liked the way they said it. When it was like, they were like, you don't rob Peter to pay Paul or something.
Exactly.
It was something like that.
Exactly.
That's a good way to put it.
Where you don't make the defense worse to make the offense better when you already have such a good thing going on defense. With
yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it also just comes back to the small sample size. Everybody's freaking out about why isn't the offense on top? It's like, A, we don't have Jack Eichel anymore. But B, It's still early, but you still don't move Matt Grizzly.
I just
someone else.
You move Shane Switzer.
Yeah,
you move Brian Dibley.
I was just gonna say Shane Switzer is probably the only guy that you can do that with because the
right
other
now,
guys are just they're defensemen. That's what they're gonna play. And I think like kind of what you were saying, Sarah. That I mean, I think maybe Red Hot Hockey that might be the benchmark of like kind of let's see where they are because I think that's kind of like it's right before going into the December games, and then you have a couple December games, then you move on to a little bit of a break. So I think maybe if you see then that the offense isn't going, maybe start thinking about kind of moving things around, moving pieces around. But right now, don't do anything.
But even then, it's been four games. And even then, like, if you did want to move a defenseman to forward, who gets the boot? Like, I think that I can't think of anybody. Nobody's doing well, but I don't think any of them are doing excessively badly enough to maybe work their way out of a spot. If you
right.
know what I mean.
There's no one that's really sticking out that's doing wow, like they don't look like they should be out there. I haven't seen that.
Right.
Maybe they might not be scoring, but at the same time, no one's doing just terribly that they shouldn't be playing.
Yeah, because everyone's struggling to score. So.
Right, it's the whole team. And so, we have two games coming up this weekend. BU goes to Merrimack on Friday night and another big game on Saturday at Aganis against Denver, both ranked opponents. So, how do you guys see those games playing out, and who do you think takes those games?
I mean, this is, like, without question, a huge weekend for BU. I think, without question, like, they haven't played a ranked opponent yet.
Yeah, they're their first ranked opponents this
year,
and one of them's a top five team.
Yeah.
And in conference for one.
Yeah, and
for
there's
Merrimack.
A conference game before that.
Mm-hmm. And it's just really, it's a huge weekend because BU, I mean, they had Union, but Union wasn't ranked, but it'll really be a chance to see if BU can play comparably with ranked teams. And Coach Quinn today said that, well, every team in hockey is a ranked team. Like, you can't take any team lightly.
Right.
But I think without question, these two teams are going to be a huge test for BU. A really important test to see, is this team for real? I don't want to quite put that label on them this early, but I think that this will be kind of like much like the Michigan weekend last year. That was kind of the weekend.
And
it was around the same time,
where
we were kind of like, wait, this team's actually really good. And I think this weekend kind of holds the same, wait, this team is really good, or wait, this team might not be up to par kind of bearings with it.
It gives BU an opportunity to really show what they're all about as a team, and it's early in the season, so like if it is awful, they have time to adjust, but also they could really break out here and really give themselves a chance to build some momentum going forward into the rest of the season. It's really a huge opportunity for them.
And they're starting out against a team in Merrimack that last year they got off to a hot start. They were one of the teams ranked in the USCHO top 20 poll. And last couple years, they've done really well at home. And what we saw, I mean, last year, BU only scored, I think, one goal in that game on the road at Merrimack.
1-1 tie.
It was a 1-1 tie. Matt Lane, I think, scored one of his Matt Lane goals, which is on the doorstep, a rebound, or just right in close. And it's such a smaller rink there that the speed game really gets shut down, and there's not much space to maneuver around. So I think it'll be an interesting go for BU against a team that's ranked and playing well. I know it's early, but going into an environment that's not conducive to scoring, and their offense hasn't been scoring all that much as it is, so that should be a tough test. And then to come home against a team like Denver, though they're traveling across the country, they're still a great hockey team, and they've gave BU fits a couple of years ago in Denver. That wasn't a very close game. So, I mean, there are not too many players left from that team. There are still some, so I'm sure they remember that one and they'd like to have a better outcome than that game out in Denver.
All right, I think that's all we have for tonight. We talked about quite a lot, ranted quite a bit. but thanks for listening, you guys. We will be at both games this weekend. We'll be up in North Andover Friday night, and we'll be back at Aguinas on Saturday. So be sure to follow our live blog at hockey.dailyfreepress.com.